Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, 2019. This is episode 1575, and that's the last time you're going to hear my bad Irish accent. Enjoy! The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Peak PTT, the leading provider of push-to-talk systems for business communications. For instant, always-on, nationwide communications, visit peakptt.com. And use a promo code TWIT for 15% off. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. It's silly to call it computers. That sounds like the 90s. Oh, it's computer talk time. But in fact, you all have a computer probably right now in your pocket or right by your side. You go to a restaurant. What do you see? The first thing people do is they take their computer, yes, it's a computer, out of your pocket, and you put it on the table. We've had to with our teenager, not because of him, because of us, we've had to say, okay, everybody put the phones in the middle of the table in a stack. And then the first person to grab their phone has to pay for dinner. Invariably, it's me. 888-ASK-LEO. Grab your phone and give us a ring. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you can still reach us. Just use Skype Out and it won't cost you anything. Or something like Skype Out. You know, something that allows you to call phone numbers in the U.S. 888 is a toll-free number. There's a website, too. Apologies, it's not bright green, nor am I. But you can't tell, can you? that's the beauty of the radio. Oh, yeah. I'm wearing my green suit and my shamrock tie. And I've got my my green derby on. So I'm ready for St. Patrick's Day. How about you? If you want to visit the website, it's techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And that's free, by the way. There's no sign up or anything. And that's where we put answers to all the questions. Everything you need to know is up there. Techguylabs.com. Oh, it's a weird situation going on around the world right now because of this horrific tragedy in New Zealand in Christchurch. And as far as I know, I almost don't even want to talk about it. I don't want to give the shooter any attention at all. But as you probably know, the shootings were live streamed on Facebook Live. And imagine how horrific those are. And God willing, you will never, and I will never, and our children will never see those. But that's not thanks to the efforts of millions of users all across the internet who have decided this would be a great thing to share. Apparently, they're very graphic and horrific. And I can't think that that sharing it has any value at all. Obviously, it's a prurient interest, if nothing else. But also, I worry that it might encourage continued violence. It might glorify it, right? Oh, look, he's a superstar on Facebook Live. Facebook says now it has removed 1.5 million reshares of that video. Can you believe that? That's just in the first 24 hours. About 1.2 million were blocked at upload. They have software that can say, oh, yeah, we see that. Don't prevent it. That means still 300,000 got through and had to be manually taken down. Same problem on YouTube and Twitter. Man, I've never been so happy that I deleted my Facebook, my Twitter, my Instagram accounts. Never been so glad. I understand, and I got an email from somebody who said, Leo, you don't realize how valuable Facebook is to me. That's how I keep in touch with family and friends. And, you know, I agree. I think that's wonderful. It's a shame that it's Facebook that's doing that because they are clearly not good stewards of all this. And I don't blame them for the live stream. I mean, if that was going to happen, if you allow live streaming, and many sites do, we stream live video of our show through, you know, Facebook. No, we don't use Facebook. That's right. But we do YouTube, Ustream, Twitch, Mixer, which is Microsoft's live streaming. So we do a lot of live streaming. And I think that's a great thing. And I don't know how Facebook could have prevented this. And yet, it just feels like actions like this are magnified. Sure, they're magnified by the news media and the 24-hour news cycle and 24-hour news channels. But they're not replaying that horrific video. It's because there's no gatekeepers on these websites that people can do that and share it. And the chances are that you and, worse, your kids might run across it, stumble on it. And you know how hard it is to turn away from something like that. It just makes me sad. One of the founders of WhatsApp, Brian Acton, who left Facebook this year, he's been going around. He's part of the Delete Facebook movement now. He made $24 billion. Well, his company was sold. WhatsApp was sold to Facebook for $22 to $24 billion. That number, you'll see that number varying depending on the value of Facebook's stock. You could say, well, yeah, Brian, nice now that you say delete Facebook after you already, you know, became a multi-billionaire. He said, it's not my fault. It's the profit model. He says, you go back to this Silicon Valley culture and people say, well, couldn't you have just said no? He said, no, we can't, because once you take investment, he had a minority stake in WhatsApp. Once you take investors, once you have shareholders, you kind of have to do he said you have to make the, quote, rational choice to take a boatload of money. I had 50 employees, he said. He's talking, by the way, this is a talk he gave to students at Stanford where he graduated. He was speaking to a computer science class. You go back to this, he says, I had 50 employees. I had to think about them. Yeah, that's true. And the money they'd make from this sale. Yeah, who doesn't need $100 million, right? Well, nice. I had to think about our investors. I had to think about our minority stake. I didn't have the full clout to say no if I wanted to. You know, somebody missing from that list are users. Because, you know, users would have been happier, I think, with WhatsApp if it had not been sold to Facebook, right? If it had remained a private enterprise offering private messaging. He left Facebook November of 2017 after more than 3 years. There was tension over making money. See, if a company pays $22 billion for your company, what's the next thing they're going to try to do? Yeah, make that money back. So they wanted to put ads on WhatsApp. They wanted to use it as a channel between advertisers and users. And he said no. And he and his fellow founder, Jan Koum, both left Facebook. They didn't, mostly over disagreeing over how to make money and frankly, approaches to data privacy and user privacy. Brian Acton said he's critical of business models that incentivize, and this is Wall Street, incentivize companies to prioritize profits over people's privacy. I'd go a step further, and if you think about it, almost all of these networks prioritize profits over you as the user, profits over users. That seems short-term thinking in the long run. Unhappy users are definitely going to hit your profits. Or are we such sheep that we just go, oh, well, okay, fine. I have to use Facebook. I have no other way to stay in touch with family and friends. Too bad nobody invented the telephone or messaging or websites. Too bad that was never invented. I have to use Facebook. So he says, stop supporting the companies. We give them power, says Brian Acton. That's the bad part. We buy their products. We sign up for these websites. His last words to these Stanford computer science students, delete Facebook, right? But the underlying lesson is really this is how Silicon Valley is set up. He's telling these computer science students, kids who are going to go out into the job market in a year or two and be part of Silicon Valley, watch out. Watch out, because there's intense pressure to put your users second, put their privacy second. He says the way it's structured right now, it was inevitable that we would have what we call surveillance capitalism, companies that make their profit by surveilling us. And I think the only way we can stop this, we have to stand up and say, no, enough. 8888-ASK-LEO. That was my sermon for the day. If you agree or disagree, I'd love to hear from you. We'll help you with your computer and technology problems, too. Help you spend some money or maybe save some money. 888-827-5536. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. She's, what is it? Invincible?
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable?
But this sounds like the Red Hot Chili Peppers to me.
Well, you're still unbreakable, right? Kim Schaffer, our phone angel, taking your calls, prepping you for your big appearance on national radio. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
You are wearing green, dang it.
I'm wearing green.
She's unbreakable. I can't pinch you or anything. You got a green wall.
I've got a green wall. I was talking down the hall. I said, good thing I'm not a weather person because you can't wear green.
Oh, that's right. I never even thought of that.
Yeah, you just end up blending in. You're like a...
I never even thought of that.
Floating head.
What do they do for St. Patrick's Day,
the weather guy cannot wear green. Everybody else can, but he can't. If you're going to be...
That's a great excuse. I'm going to use that excuse from now on.
If you're on a green screen...
I love it.
Cannot.
So who should I... Because I don't think green... You look good in green. I don't think I could... Do you think
You'd probably look fine in green. I just don't have a lot of it.
My problem with green is you're wearing a nice moss green. That counts,
huh? Yeah, I don't like... Yeah, even the jacket that I have is too green.
Everything I have is like lime green.
Oh, yeah. Well, any green is green.
And nobody looked good in lime green. You drink enough green beer, I guess anything looks. What are you gonna? You're going to work after this and serving green beer?
I'm avoiding that place like the plague today.
Because
I had to work it last year and it was a disaster. But it probably won't be as bad today.
Kim works
it's a Sunday
as a barkeep.
A bar wench.
barkeep at an English bar.
Yep.
Do they, even though they're English, they have...
No, it's an English-Irish.
It's an English-Irish.
Okay. Wife is Irish, husband's English,
okay.
And they battle.
Boy,
so.
They must have great fights.
There's great fights in
Who should I talk to first?
Larry in San Francisco has a new video card, and he's getting green sparkles when games
Happy
are...
Happy St. Patrick's
and
Day,
I said it's
Larry.
Because of St. Patrick's Day, and I don't think that he's taking that as...
He's getting the green sparkles.
The green sparkles.
It's a leprechaun. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Hello, Larry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. It's an honor to speak to you. I've been a longtime fan.
Thank you.
In fact, when you first started the Twit Network, you had a show here in San Francisco at the Apple Store on Market.
Yes.
And I won one of the only that I know of existing Twit hoodies, a black hoodie with a big Twit logo in the front.
Don't wear that to a hacker convention.
Oh, no, I have it safely hidden away.
Yo, smart. That's going to be valuable someday.
Exactly, because it's one of the few that was in what you guys call programmer size that would fit.
Yeah, we call it programmer size. I love it. Well, I'm so glad to see you again. I remember that at the Apple Store. That was a lot of fun. We had a good time doing the show there.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was. Wasn't it? Big crowd. I got a little sweaty setting up all the gear. That was the episode where I decided I'm going to hire people to do this from now on.
Bad.
Yeah, I was running around, running mic cables, doing all that stuff. I thought, I'm too old for this. What can I do for you, Larry?
Well, for my upcoming birthday I have a birthday coming in a month, so I decided to buy myself a new video card because I'm a gamer. I'm an old-fashioned gamer. I build my own computers and have the third-party video card and third-party sound card. So I splurged and I bought myself the RTX 2060.
Oh, that's the new state-of-the-art NVIDIA video card with ray tracing.
Yes.
Nice. And nice.
I made the mistake, or maybe it was a mistake. I hope that was the only mistake, of slapping it into my 6-year-old computer. And there was a lot of shaking and rumbling. No, there wasn't. But it was working first, and then... I'm playing that new game Anthem that's supposedly tweaked especially for this game.
Yeah, right. That's one of the few games that uses that the capabilities of that card.
And I got huge lag. I could then all kinds of artifacts, and then all of a sudden, it sort of in the game looked like it was raining, but everywhere that there was supposed to be a shadow, there's green sparkle.
Yeah.
And I thought this isn't good.
Yeah.
I shut it down and left it alone, and then I decided to go back to my beloved World of Warcraft. And I got that in World of Warcraft, too. In fact, I see it, or I was seeing it on my back, like I have an art piece as my background, and I started seeing that unless I like shut down and restarted. And I updated the drivers. I always make sure I have the latest drivers and Windows is updated. So I eventually took the card out. But like, I want to use the latest and greatest, my birthday gift, and I can't figure out if it's because my machine is old.
No, it's the card.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry to say, but you could probably send it back and get it RMA'd. The few things that you could try, and probably they won't have anything to do with it, but you might try it on a different monitor with a different cable. But almost always, green artifacts mean that the video card itself has issues. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. The one thing that you're not overclocking that card, right?
No, I don't overclock. I don't do that.
Okay. Because those cards can be overclocked. They have, as you probably noticed, a fairly hefty cooling component.
Oh, my God.
Huge. These are for people who don't know what we're talking about. You know, we always talk about the CPU in your computer, the processor, the Intel chip. Sometimes it's an AMD chip that does the thinking. But gamers are doing intense graphics as well. And so you often have a graphics processing unit or a GPU working alongside. And, you know, because you have an older machine, it sometimes is the case that you can overbuy a card. A card will spend a lot of time waiting for the CPU to figure out, you know, where that player is in Anthem. And it won't be able to render it until it gets those calculations. So the card sometimes can be too fast for the CPU, and that could be a problem. I doubt you're getting all the benefit of the 2070. You might get the ray tracing, though. I don't know. Make sure your power supply can handle the card. Sometimes low power to the card is going to be a part of the issue. Remember, that card has to draw not only a lot of power for the GPU, but also for the cooling. If I were you, I know you wanted to get the latest, greatest, but you might find a 1070 working better anyway, just because of the CPU not really being super fast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So then there's some tips from the chat room to Larry. So let me see what they say. Yep, certainly power supply is something to consider.
Well, I have a 1,000-watt power supply. I always get the biggest power supply I can just for this issue.
Okay, yeah, because you're putting some more demand on there. And you updated the drivers. You did all that stuff, right?
And I'm running a 1070 in the machine now. That was working fine. In fact, that's what I put back in. I'm thinking maybe because I'm sort of in the midst of building a new machine, maybe when I get a newer machine, maybe I can use it then. Because I don't think I
maybe can. I think that's a bad. I think the odds are that just the card itself is defective.
Ah.
you can send it back. You just got it.
Well, yeah, but I got it off eBay.
Oh, nuts!
Well, not wasn't used though, but it was off a seller on eBay, and I don't know what the timing was. It's been at least a month that I've had it.
Yeah. Well. Try it on another computer. Try it on different monitors. Try it with different, you know, all of those things can impact it. Don't overclock it. I'm trying to think of what other, you know, make sure your power supply is enough. Sometimes 1,000 watts isn't really 1,000 watts. You know, it depends on who you got it from. You want to get a quality power supply. I'm looking, chat room sending me, and it's doing on everything, right?
Well, just the game.
Just game. Stuff that to game. Challenge the card, yeah. The other thing is try running the benchmarks. So there were some benchmarks will come with the NVIDIA, and then you can also download some of the 3D Mark benchmarks. And just try running those, see if you see the artifacts there as well.
Okay. I'll give that a shot then.
Yeah. The CPU, a six-year-old computer, is really a lot. The 1070 is better matched to that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the 1070's been great. I've had no problem.
Yeah, yeah. So my concerns would be, A, that it's a defective card. The fact that you got it on eBay maybe makes me lean more in that direction.
Well, it was new. I mean,
yeah, well, maybe it was new.
They specifically said that. I would never.
Oh, they would never lie to you on eBay.
No, Leo.
But if I were, let's say I were a guy who bought a video card that had green artifacts and I couldn't get my money back, I might try to sell it as new on eBay. And
no, I wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that. Now, I'm not encouraging you to do that, but I'm not saying that somebody else didn't do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Busy day coming up in about an hour. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. In 2 hours, Sam Abulsamid, our car guy, is going to make an appearance in studio. He's driving a new electric vehicle from Kia, the Kia Niro. So we'll get his first take on the Kia Niro driving it up from San Francisco today. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk high tech, let's go to Cheektowaga, New York. Gary is on the line. Hi, Gary.
Hi, Leo. A couple months ago, I talked to you about using a file transfer service called Lockbin, and I've been using it since. It's pretty good. But I saw the other day that
Mozilla.
Yeah. Is that safe, you think?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. First of all, it's open source. So this is something called Firefox Send, and it's at send.firefox.com. It's free, so that's cheaper than the service you were using. And it allows you, if you have a Firefox account, which is also free, to send up to, what is it, a gig and a half?
I think 2.5.
Two and a half, that's right. So 1 gig if you don't have an account, and it's anonymous in that case. You just drag it to send.firefox.com. You can have it encrypted. You can share a password with somebody. You set a time when you put a file in there. You set a amount of time that that file will stay on the server, which actually is a good thing. You don't want it there permanently forever because you just want it to expire. And of course, they don't want to store it forever either. So when you upload it, you can say expires after 1 download to 100 downloads or 1 day to 7 days, actually 5 minutes to 7 days. You can say, okay, it's good for 5 minutes, and then be on the phone with your buddy saying, quick, download it, or text him the link. Say, you got 5 minutes to download this. I think this is awesome. Now, if you are, I can't remember, are you an attorney or a doctor? Do you have
tax attorney? So I
that's
have
what
a lot
I thought. Yeah,
papers.
I remember that. Are there regulations though about security and sharing tax returns for you?
Well, we're not subject to doctors like HIPAA laws.
Yeah, that's what I'm
wondering.
Lawyers
are expected to preserve their clients' confidential secrets and take necessary precautions to do so.
But it's not specified exactly what you have to do. See, if you were sharing medical records as a physician, then there's HIPAA compliance, and I doubt this is HIPAA compliant only because they haven't taken the effort to certify it. Same with FINRA or CJIS, the other security standards. But as an attorney, I can tell you, because it's open source, because it's from Firefox, I would absolutely trust it.
I'll tell you the reason I like it, because the service I have, I like, but, you know, and they, one of their features is they keep stuff forever, but I don't want to keep it forever.
That's
I
right. That's right. After that's April 15th, it's nothing. It's dust.
Well, I'll keep it on my file, but I want to keep it on there. But the problem is any emails, you have to go to the site to read. The thing I tried Firefox, the thing I like about Firefox Send is that I get the email with the link in it. So
right.
It's in my, you know, because I use my emails as a source of records.
Right. There you go.
I know what the text is, where otherwise I got to go, I got to download it, I got to convert it to a PDF and save it. It's just so, anyways, I wanted to make sure it was safe.
Yeah, I am absolutely confident. Mozilla is a really good organization, and it is open source, so that means that somebody who really cared about it could vet it. You know, obviously you and I don't have the skill to look at the code, but some, you know, presumably people are, and I think Firefox is not so dumb as to, you know, put out something that would be dangerous. So you do get a link, as you know, when you do the upload button, you get a link which is suitable for texting. If you wanted to text it, you could text it.
Yep.
You could email it, of course. That link is long and confusing, and that gives you some security. I think this is a really nice service that Firefox has introduced. This is what Mozilla does. They're an open source kind of a public good company. They do make money, but they make money on the browser from Google, because Google pays them for search referrals. If you use Google to search on your browser, Google sends money to Mozilla, and that's hundreds of millions of dollars a year. It's plenty of money for Mozilla to operate. So this is kind of beneficial for everybody. And the other thing I like about it, you don't have to use Firefox. You can use any browser, and you don't have to have an account or anything like that. So it takes away some of the burden on your clients. You can just send them a link and say, here's your securely, you know, saved tax return. If you want to add extra security, you can give them, when they're meeting with you, say, I'm going to send you a link to the tax return. This will be the password. And you could give that to them. And
well,
that would...
I don't prepare tax returns. I represent people who are having issues with their government over past returns they've prepared. But that's where I wanted to make a comment about tax preparation software.
Oh, yeah, good. Because we were talking yesterday, I don't know if you heard it, about TurboTax. And that's what I use for my mom and my son used for the first time he's filed for taxes, because the first time he has actual income. What do you think of those?
Oh, yeah, I've used TurboTax myself. I've used H&R Block, too. I switch between whichever one's cheapest.
Yeah, because it's all the same. It's really just a fancy calculator, right?
Yeah, but they're both good. They're both good. And there's others, too, that are good. So I think people should be doing it unless they have the need for, you know, an accountant to be doing their work. I don't see why they're not doing it on TurboTax or they don't have a computer.
Yeah.
But
well,
one thing I want to advise people to do, because I run into this all the time when I'm, you know, people get audited and have issues with the government, is the receipts. The government says, show me what that $12,000 deduction is made up. And they don't know. They don't have copies of what they have no idea.
Keep the paperwork, kids.
Yeah. What they should scan or take pictures of that paperwork, give it the same name as the line number, and save it with your tax return. I got clients who have 38 pictures of their kid taking his first foul shot in high school basketball, but they don't have any records of their deductions.
Well, and would it be adequate to use your camera phone to take a picture of that receipt? Would that be sufficient?
Yes. The government can insist on original documentation in some cases, but in 99% of the time, they will not. A copy's fine. In fact, most of the communication I have with IRS now is over the internet, because the auditors are in another state, another city. We never see each other. Everything is being passed.
Really? You don't have to go hat in hand into the office anymore, huh?
Very seldom.
Nice.
Very seldom.
So you couldn't really present originals because they're not even in the same room as you.
That's right. We don't even, the power of the attorney is even faxed in. It's and that gives me authority to access my client's account, and that gets faxed. The original doesn't even get sent anymore.
So as we approach tax time, it's probably too late for you this year, but just from now on, keep the receipts. Or better, you know, I mean, if you don't want to keep a shoebox, you got a phone, take a picture of it.
Yeah, scanning's better, but pictures, anything that shows it clearly is good enough.
Nowadays, camera phones are pretty good, and there's even Google and others offer software that essentially simulates a scan with the camera phone. And that's all a scanner is. It's just a camera on a flatbed. One other tip, probably good this time of year, because you're going to start getting those robocalls that say, this is the IRS. You are about to be arrested. Please call now. That's not the IRS.
Yes, I've had a couple of people call me after they've sent money.
Oh.
It's just sad.
Oh, no, really? Oh.
Yeah. See, what the reason those work, Leo, is because there are people who know there might be something.
They're
wrong.
A little guilty. They have a guilty conscience.
So as soon as they hear IRS, they go, "Oh, I got caught," and they do anything they can. They think, you know, because they're afraid of going to jail. Even though most of these cases aren't such that you'd go to jail over anyways.
No.
And that's what those scammers are looking for—the person with that guilty conscience who's going to react.
Wow.
Out of fear.
So don't. The IRS will not call you, and they will definitely not call you with a robot voice.
Yeah, or now they do have people with foreign accents working for the IRS.
Yeah, but they'll send you a letter first, right? Look for the letter. Yeah.
Yes, they'll send you a letter first before they contact you. And then there's an 800 number you can call back at any time.
Before you send any money to anybody, call the IRS. That's true of anybody. Call them. Don't let them call you. Hey, I really appreciate it, Gary. Thanks for the information.
You're welcome.
Have a great day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Carlos in San Jacinto. Hello, Carlos.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, Leo, I wanted to get your opinion on something, your insight. I was in one of my classes, and we were talking about cutting the cord. I have about 5 terabytes of movies from Dish. Trying to figure out how to cut the cord and ease the pain. And one of my students said he had access to just about everything. I said, what is it? And he showed me Nitro TV.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oh, you're from, I'm sure you're familiar with it. But I was really
basically
intrigued.
The deal is there are a number. These are called over the top or OTT services. They're television services that don't use the cable or don't use the dish. They use your internet access. So they're coming in over the top. And as you probably know, HBO, Showtime, Stars, all the premium cable channels now offer over the top subscriptions. They end up being as expensive as a cable subscription, but, you know, at least you don't have to have a cable company. Problem is most people the internet still need to pay for the internet, and the cable companies just jack the price up on the internet so that you end up giving them plenty of money.
I heard you say that.
Yeah.
I heard you talk about that, but for $20 per device, I have all of the premium, all of the pay-per-view, all of the sports, the networks, nationwide, international.
That's a little suspicious. So,
It's been working for a while, and I'm happy with it so far. But I get everything, Leo. I was really
how could that be? If HBO charges you $15 a month for HBO Go, how could it be that for not much more than that you get that and everything else?
I don't know.
Yeah.
You can certainly try it and see how it
works. No, I know. I just would caution you. There are a lot of, first of all, it could be illegal. You know, I would call HBO and say, what do you think, HBO, about these guys? Eventually, if they are doing something wrong, they'll be shut down. So, you know, they're at least charging you. There are a lot of these, you know, free satellite TV services that offer, as Nitro does, thousands of channels, all the sports you could ever want. And what you get is often Argentinian soccer and, you know, stuff that's on the internet anyway. But you're saying you're getting pay-per-view sports?
Yes, I get everything. International.
You get the fights. You get the fights that HBO charges $60 for. You get that?
Yeah.
Almost certainly it's illegal.
Well, okay. So
I'm sorry to give you the bad news, but think about it. I mean, HBO isn't going to, sign me up. And, you know, you're not going to, look, nobody's going to come knocking at your door and say you're under arrest for using Nitro TV. But eventually Nitro TV will get caught. There, you know, you can go one of our regulars. Owen J.J. Stone, doctor, was telling me about his buddy. He says, and he's not that bright, who sells hacked Fire TV sticks at his girls' Little League games. He goes around and says, hey, $20 for FI, and you can get all the channels, you can get everything. Well, yeah, but that's taking advantage of loopholes and, you know, the problem with the internet, it's hard to copy protect everything. So I'm just looking at Nitro TV. If you tell me that you're getting paid channels plus you're getting things like the big, you know, pay-per-view sports for $20 a month, something's not right. Something's not right. Let's see. Let me see. I'm looking at the FAQ for Nitro TV. They say anything about our deal with HBO or CBS allows us to, it's not hard to set something like this up, to be honest with you. I could set it up right now. I pay for one cable subscription and then rebroadcast everything out to a million people. When they get caught, it'll go down. Don't give them anything extra. If there's somebody from Nitro TV listening who would like to explain to me how they can, for $20 a month, offer literally hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of television programming, I'd love to hear that. Do they have some special deal? There's always the risk, too, because obviously these guys maybe aren't super careful about things. I don't want to impugn them, but you're giving them your credit card number, right? So there are some specialized services on the internet, free or low cost, that give you hundreds and hundreds of channels, and it's all of stuff that's already on the internet that you just combine it all. This is a little different looking. This I mean, if you're telling me they're offering you, let me just, I would bet, let me just do a quick who is on these guys. I would just bet that they are not in the United States, or they would have been shut down much more quickly. I'm just going to do what we call a who is on these guys. NitroIPTV.org. Oh, yeah, they're a nonprofit. That's it. They're registered. Oh, Firesticks.co. Oh, boy. Their registration is in Reston, Virginia, but I think that's their internet service provider. They don't Panama. There we go. Panama. So it's hard for that's why they're in Panama. All I could say is you probably wouldn't go to jail for doing it. Probably because they're in Panama, they're not going to jail either. They're certainly willing to take the hit. This happens all the time. The internet enables this kind of stuff. It is illegal. You might consider the moral and ethical, you know, constraints on yourself and whether you can live by this. But this is not legal. $20 a month, and you're getting HBO, Showtime, and all the pay-per-view fights and hundreds of channels, including the locals. No. This is not legal. What they've done is they got somebody in the United States who buys all that stuff and ships it back down over a VPN or some other protected channel down to Panama, where they put it up on a server, and they're taking your credit card. Now, unfortunately, the cable companies haven't earned a lot of loyalty and love from their customers, nor has AT&T, which owns HBO. So I think a lot of people just in their minds go, well, serves them right, I guess. But I think it's unethical. It's certainly illegal. What they're doing is illegal. Now, I'd have to ask a lawyer, if you're buying this stuff, I mean, it's not clear that it's illegal. You're paying them $20 a month. You might reasonably be naive and say, oh, yeah, for $20 a month, I get to do this. Must be legal. I'm spending the money. I'm giving them money. I don't think you'd get the TV police knocking on your door. And I don't think, even if you don't like a company, I don't think it's okay to steal from them. I don't think that lets you off the hook, really. I'm just looking on the website. I don't see anything that says, oh yeah, we got a license. We can do this. It's fine. We pay HBO a buck a user. That's all they want. And I don't think so. I don't think so. There are a huge number and growing of these IPTV services that are cheap, but they're really reselling stolen signals, and they're mostly offshore, and they're very hard to track down. And frankly, this is just the surface of a huge amount of I want to say unethical, immoral, and illegal things that are being done on the internet. And the internet really makes it easy. And if somebody comes along and sues one of these companies, they disappear into the forest. They're offshore anyway. And start another one under a different name 5 minutes later, because it's that easy. One of the things we were very excited about with the internet when it first came around, and I was one of the early users, and I remember we were all so excited, is because it made it possible to do, we called it friction-free e-commerce. You know, just easy, just sit from, you know, in the comfort of your own home and buy stuff, have it shipped to you. It eliminated all the friction of, you know, going to a store. But it's also, in eliminating that friction, eliminated a lot of the things that, you know, if you have a storefront, it's a lot harder to disappear into the smoke, into the trees, and reconstitute somewhere else. But on the internet, trivially easy. And unfortunately, you know, even though companies, I see that somebody sent me a link to a Dish from a year ago suing a couple of these IPTV services, you don't see a lot of stories like that because it's so hard for them to do. And it's mostly fruitless because if somebody is offshore doing this, you have to sue them where they're doing business. You know, the best thing you can do is go to the credit card companies and say, hey, please block these guys. And the credit card companies will often do that. But then they just reconstitute on another name and start selling again. The real problem I have is that it makes it more difficult for the legitimate versions of these, like YouTube TV. I guess because that's YouTube, that's or Sony's PlayStation View. Sony, you know it's okay. There's a one people really like called Pluto TV. That's legit. The acid test of this is, are you getting something that you really should be paying for? Are you getting it for nothing or very little? That's really the acid test. You know if this is too good to be true. And if it is, then somebody's getting ripped off. Pluto TV is actually owned by Viacom. So one of the big TV companies. So I think you probably can assume that it's doing okay and it's legit. I don't know what the answer is, except that I think we all have to kind of think about what kind of world we want to be in and what kind of world we want to create for our kids. And don't we want to do the right thing? Let's do the right thing, you know, as best we can. If you know it's wrong, you're not going to get caught. That's not why you don't do it. You don't do it because it's wrong. Just because it's not the world we want to live in. It's a better world for everybody if people are honest and you can trust them and they do the right thing. It's just better for everybody. It's hard sometimes, but it's the right thing to do. I guess that's my little preach for the day. Anais in Fort Myers, Florida. Hello, Anais. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, good way to butcher my name. It's Ananias.
Okay, I tried. Ananias. Hi, Ananias. What kind of name? Is that Spanish?
No, it's from Acts. Ananias of Damascus.
Damascus. Wow, yeah, I like
he,
it.
He was the first man to meet with Paul. When Paul
was on the road to Damascus. So it's a biblical name. I'll be darned.
Yeah.
So that just shows my ignorance, and I apologize.
That's all right.
Ananias of Damascus. He and his wife Sapphira, who could forget? Nice people.
Yeah.
So what can I do for you?
Well, okay. First, the thing about morals, it's always a personal question. You know, what you do in the dark matters.
Yeah, I agree. And I think people think, well, I'm not going to get caught. Nobody's going to know. So what's the harm of it? In fact, I just read a post from somebody who said, I feel like a schmuck because my buddy's been using this for years, paying nothing, and I've been paying, you know, $100 a month to the cable company. What an idiot I am.
And yeah, it's future rewards. That's what it's about.
Well, yeah, certainly that's one reason to do it. I think just do it because it's the right thing. But you're right. Yeah, just think about karma. Heaven, whatever it is that helps you do the right thing, do it. And thanks for, by the way, restoring Saul's sight. That was a nice thing to do. Okay, Ananias. What can I?
Ananias. The
what?
Second, there's a little bit of a tale about, this is going back to the mid-90s when I lived up north. The local computer shop had their shelf of for reselling old equipment, and I was a frequent customer there. And in the back room, they had a stack of Apple Quadras.
Wow.
Four of them, mid-90s.
Yeah.
They didn't know what to do with them. They didn't use them. They weren't hooked up to anything. And they gave them to me.
Oh, what a nice gift.
I have no idea. I've never been an Apple guy. I don't subscribe to Apple economics.
Yeah, you got a good deal, though, on those. Those were pretty cheap.
Yeah.
So
tell me a tale.
If you go to everymac.com, which is a kind of a non-commercial site, it's really a very useful site. where it has a complete guide to every Mac ever made. You can look up those Quadros, and you can actually look it up by model number, so you can know exactly what you've got. Those Quadros are so old and are running. Unfortunately, the big gulf is that they're running PowerPC chips, so they are not compatible with any modern software at all. You know, Apple about 15 years ago switched over to Intel chips. So these computers come from the early 90s. They run PowerPC chips. At the time, they were, you know, $4,000. They were very expensive.
Wow.
But, you know, that was the early, that was then, this is now. You did that guy a favor because you got that chunk of plastic off his hands. I don't know what you could do with them. They don't have a, you could, what, do you know what model number they are?
No idea.
So there's a Quadro 605 all the way up to the 950. And if you knew the model number, I could give you some specs. But let's pick, say, a Quadro 650.
Right.
Processor speed. Now, remember, modern processors run between about 2 to 4 gigahertz. This runs at 33 megahertz.
Right.
So it's 1,000 times slower. And it's a 68040, the PowerPC chip. It's actually a Motorola chip. So
yeah.
So let's see. The system bus speed, also 33 megahertz. Here's the good news. They came with as much as 8 megabytes of RAM.
Yeah. Typical
machine today has, again, 1,000 times more. They were really good at the time. I remember they had really great video cards. They often had graphics processing cards. But, yeah, the latest version of macOS you can run on there is System 7. System 7. That you can't even get that anymore. Are they any good for today? You couldn't really put anything on there that, you know, you couldn't put a, you could put Linux on it, I guess. Wouldn't run very usefully. I think really, unless you know, you might put them on eBay. Go check eBay and see. Because there are people like my crazy engineer, Alex, who loves old Macs. And if they're in pretty good shape, you might be able to sell it for $50. Let's see. Here's a Quadro 950, $175 on eBay. Not bad. Here's $650, vintage, working. So, yeah, I guess there's an enthusiast market. That's what you do. eBay's your friend. This here. Sandeep in Orlando, Florida is next. Hi, Sandeep.
Hey, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I was just wondering what recommendation you have for a dash cam. And just for your listeners, there actually was an incident in Orlando where, I'm making these colors up, but a red car hit a blue car on the highway. The blue car spun out, and the driver actually died. And the police officer said, we had multiple witnesses that this red car hit the blue car. And then the next day or the day after, his lawyer came on TV and said, hey, my client got a $50 dash cam from Amazon the week before, and it showed that he never touched that car.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and the lawyer and the news media were told, ask the police, you know, if he didn't have that, these witnesses would have put that guy into prison.
Yep.
So that got me nervous, saying maybe I should have a dash cam.
I've had a dash cam for some time. There's a lot of things to think about with a dash cam. Some dash cams just sit on your dash and record forward. Some record forward and backward. There's all sorts of features. I think it's pretty widely agreed that the best dash cam, it's not the one I have. I'll tell you about the one I have, which I think is the best, but most reviewers think the best dash cam is the Garmin. You may know that name. They made GPS devices for a long time, but as soon as everybody's smartphone included GPS, kind of the business changed, and they figured another business would be maybe a dash cam business. This records at high def out the front. It looks a little bit like maybe a GoPro. It's like a little action camera, but it's sharp enough that you can read license plates, and I think that's fairly important. And it's not huge. You should check with the state authorities about what the rules are for mounting a camera. In California, for instance, there's limits on where you can put it on the windshield. They don't want you to block your vision.
Mm-hmm.
So it has GPS, so it knows where you are. It has Wi-Fi, so if you have the smartphone app, you can connect to it. I bought one that was a little more expensive, but has some additional features. It's called the Owl Cam. And for me, this was, I think, a more useful thing. Now, it's more expensive. It's $350. But that includes a year of LTE. So it's always connected. And in fact, if an incident happens, it has accelerometers in it. It immediately starts uploading. It is a front-facing camera that also faces backwards. So it's shooting you at the same time as it's shooting out. And it has big, bright LED lights facing into the car's cabin. And that's useful if somebody breaks in. If there's glass break or a sudden shock, it immediately starts recording with those lights on bright. And I think that's kind of cool. Also, they offer a replacement if your camera gets stolen, because all of these cameras are kind of visible in the windshield, and maybe somebody's going to say, oh, I'm going to steal that camera. And that's one advantage of having LTE, is that it's recording that as the guy steals it. So it's got very good high quality video. It keeps 14 days history. And at any point you can tell it, and I won't say this out loud in case somebody's listening in the car and has an Owl Cam, you can say a keyword, okay, something, and it will record, and you can name it, and it uploads it, and you can view the clip. So if you're not in an incident, but you see an incident up in front of you, for instance, you could say, hey, get that, and it'll give you the last 30 seconds plus the next 30 seconds. I really like this thing. It's a little more expensive. I think you get more for the price. Owlcam.com. So that's what I use.
Does it record when you're, like you said, if someone tries to break into the car? So if it's continuous recording, would that drain your battery?
Ah, and this is one other thing I like about this. It connects to the OBD2 port. So instead of connecting to a cigarette lighter, it connects in such a nice way. It looks like it's a built-in thing. You can actually trim the wiring down into the dash and around. And there's a little port. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's OBD stands for onboard diagnostics. All cars since 1995 have this port, usually unused. It's designed so when you bring it to the dealer, they plug their machine into it. But it's open and available, and it does provide power. So if you're not using your OBD2 port for anything else, and there are, you know, little dongles you can put in there that'll do other things, but if you're not using for anything else, that's where it gets the power. And no, it never really hurts the battery at all, because it's not on all the time, or it's very low drain, and then the camera comes on if the accelerometer registers an incident. So you'll get video alerts on your phone. If somebody kind of backs into your car, you'll get a video of it, and it'll text you and say, hey, something just happened. I really think this is awesome. There is a monthly fee after that first year for the LTE. There's also a monthly fee for the secure storage, as is often the case with these kinds of cameras. The Garmin, if you don't like that and you don't want to do it, is a very good choice. I would look at the Owl Cam if you want some additional features. At least that'll give you some idea of, you know, what else you can do with it. I really like this Owl Cam. I bought it when it first came out, and I've had it for a long time. They also have on their website example videos, so you can. In fact, they even have a contest for people to upload their best Owl Cam videos. And some of it's crashes, some of it's just people singing. So it's fun. I think this is really cool, and I have never had occasion to use it. I've had it for more than a year, which is good, right? It's the one thing you don't want to have to use. So that's my recommendation.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Yeah, the wire cutter and most reviews I see say the Garmin is the best choice. I like my Owl Cam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That music tells me that it's time for our buddy Chris Marquardt. He's our photo guy. Joins us every week now that he's back from his traipsing through New Zealand. Joins us every week to talk about photography. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. So, what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I have a question for you. So, how often have you seen a new piece of technology or a new piece of photo technique becoming kind of the hype, the big thing, just to see it being overused a lot?
All the time. I mean,
that happens all the time, right?
All the time.
Only after a while, things start to calm down a bit and become more organic. I have a few examples. For example, HDR. Initially, HDR was really overused. You remember these photos that looked like someone dropped a paint bucket.
It looked like that Kincaid, the painter of light, had painted
yes.
them.
Yes. now I see them become more organic, right?
Yeah.
People have learned how to master this and how to incorporate this into photography. Another thing, a lot of photographers, when they buy a new very bright lens, let's say a 1.4 or 1.2 lens, they will shoot it wide open all the time. So you only have these shallow depth of field photos with everything out of focus apart from just a sliver of what you're taking a picture of. And then over time, people understand that there might be some value in closing down that aperture a bit to get a bit more context in your photo. And one thing where I see something similar happening right now is in shooting video from drones. And it's almost getting to the point where I think it is being overused. And a lot of the drone videos I see are just that. They're just shots from a flying drone, which is nice and everything, but it gets old very quickly.
Yeah. I fell for all that stuff. I bought it all.
And I know people. I know maybe you are one of the people who bought a drone and were really happy flying it for a while. And then after a while you go, but.
Right.
Why?
You know, I'll give you one
what am
more.
I gonna do with this?
Those 360 cameras. I keep buying those. Same thing.
Yes. Well, the interesting thing about those is I think we will sooner or later, hopefully sooner, have devices with us that will allow us to kind of immerse ourselves in these 360 degree videos and photos. So they might come to a point. But the drone thing. And I have a drone, little Mavic Air
I
carry
Pro
with me on vacations.
Drink in the Caribbean.
Right. And I initially did the same thing. I shot a lot of drone footage, mm-hmm. and then I ended up having only the drone footage. And I was kind of, okay, what am I going to do with this now? Until I started deliberately searching for ways to incorporate that drone footage with other things to make it kind of an organic part of what I'm of the stories that I want to tell. And there's a little story that I came across in New Zealand that blew my mind. And I've sent you a link to a little video about this. And it's a sheep farmer named Tom, but he's also a pilot.
He's also 90 years old and he built his own airplane.
And he's also 90 years old and he built his own airplane.
Usually that doesn't go together. Like, people fly the airplane they built and live to 90. So he must be good. He must be good.
Well, he definitely must be a good pilot. As they say, there are old pilots and there are bold pilots, but
yes.
There are no old and bold pilots.
Yes.
So he's been flying for almost his entire life. And I met him. They have a sheep farm again, and they rent out a guest house, and we stay there. So that's how came across him. And then one morning, his wife Jeanette says, "Hey, Tom is going to fly. You want to watch?" And he's like, "Sure, let's go."
You in the background with your drone controller.
Well, so interesting thing is, I shot that, but he's building his own planes. They are small planes. They are so called microlights, I think.
So you have a camera only one seat on the plane, right?
No, I don't. That was the thing. So I shot this story, and then I understood that it needs a bit more. It needs some footage from that airplane. But I didn't have a camera on the airplane. I was not on the airplane because it's a one-seater. So all the aerial shots are from a drone. So I pretty much flew that same path that he flew with the drone. I followed the plane.
Oh, you are
half
sneaky.
A day later. And I faked that into the video, yes. And this is how it, but you won't notice it. I mean, now you know because you're looking for the guy standing there with a
awesome
drone controller.
It's
and
awesome.
Of course you can see me there.
And you intercut it in a way that it looks like it's footage from the play. And you know what? I see this in movies all the time now. This is how they're doing it in movies too.
Of course. But just understanding that, wait a minute, you can actually use that footage from the ground and
brilliant
combine it with footage from the air.
Brilliant.
They don't have to come from the same camera. That's a bit of a revelation. And it helps tell a story better. And that's how I'm more and more using these new tools and these new technologies that are available to me. So, yeah, drones can make a lot of sense if you incorporate them with other things. And that's true for every photo technology. That's true for again, HDR or shallow depth of field, wide open lenses, or I don't know. There's like a ton
that's,
of...
That's life in technology is we get the new thing and we go crazy. I remember when desktop printing, desktop publishing and laser printers came out. And people
initially, that was...
It was bad when people got access to fonts and you'd see documents with 300 typefaces on one page. And they looked like ransom notes. But eventually we calmed down and started to use this technology appropriately. And it's great. So I think that's a really good insight into technology because there's always new technologies in photography. And some of them don't even survive, but many like HDR and drones, when they do, they become incorporated into your overall capabilities. I think that's very smart. Yeah.
Somebody's, and that's what's happening here, yes.
Yeah, I love it. Now, this you can see this on Chris's YouTube channel, which is Chris Marquardt. Can you go to discoverthetopfloor.com and get a link there?
Not a direct link, but they'll find it. Okay. They'll find it for sure.
I'll tell you what. I'll put a link to the video because it's a really cool video. And now that you know how it's made, it's fun to watch. Well, it's fun anyway, but it's even more fun because you can see. And I think filmmakers do this all the time. They mix point of view shots in with distant shots and master shots and singles and all that stuff.
The hardest bit here was to make those cameras look the same, to have the same kind of appearance, because the drone footage looks different from the footage that I shot on the ground.
You did a marvelous job.
Matching those two pieces was the most difficult part here.
You did a marvelous job. Now, we have an assignment, and I don't want you to forget it, and I said that I would do it, and I still haven't done it, but I love the idea. These assignments we do for fun. Every month, Chris tells us something to take a picture of or a way to take a picture. If you want to participate, it's simple enough. You need a Flickr account. Those are free, and you need to be a member of the Tech Guy group. Chris, what are we doing this month?
This assignment is to take a picture from an ant's perspective, and it is an assignment that has been given to us by a community member, and we have a thread up on the Flickr group where we collect the assignments that allows you, if you're a member of the group, to participate and drop in your ideas for future assignments, and I want this to be a community effort, and we're getting there.
Good. Yeah, I love the idea of this. There's no reward. At the end of the month, Chris will pick three images, and we'll talk about them on the radio show. So you get your name and lights, or whatever the radio equivalent is of that. But it's fun. It's really an excuse to get out there and take pictures. And, of course, a camera phone is fine. You don't have to have fancy gear or a drone. In fact, I don't think you could use a drone to do an ant's perspective.
Very big ant.
Chris Marquardt's at discoverthetopfloor.com, and he'll be back next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Line four, Marie in Sun. I want to say Suntan Valley. Is it Santan Valley, Arizona?
Yes.
Santan Valley. But I bet there's good suntans there.
Too many.
Yeah, probably. Hi, Marie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question. I'm thinking of replacing my regular terabyte hard drive with an SSD 1 terabyte hard drive. If I get this done, how does that or does it affect the current motherboard?
Not at all, no. Is this a laptop or a desktop?
It's a laptop.
Okay. So you don't have room for two drives, because sometimes what people do... The difference between a solid-state drive and a spinning drive in price is still fairly significant. While solid-state drives have come down a lot, sometimes people get smaller SSDs and keep their old data drive, you know, their old spinning drive for data, stuff that you don't need to access as quickly. But an SSD makes a huge difference in load time, so your system will boot 10 times faster, programs will load faster. And from the point of view of the laptop, it's no different. It's still, you know, the same SATA cord. Are you going to do it yourself or have somebody do it for you?
No, I'm going to have a computer guy do it. Okay. But I also, do you have a recommendation for, and I do need the 1 terabyte SSD drive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a recommendation for a brand?
Yes, I do. Is it a Mac or Windows?
No, it's Windows.
Okay.
What happened was my computer went belly up, and so it had to be sent in to be repaired. And when they did that, they replaced the hard drive, and the battery. And so currently it does have a new hard drive, but I still kind of would like the SSD drive.
Oh, yeah, you would. Even on an older computer, an SSD is a big speed improvement. Not as much on an older computer because the connection to the drive isn't as fast as it would be on a more modern computer. So you see the real benefit. In fact, all the whenever I buy a new computer, I don't buy spinning drives anymore. I buy SSDs all the time. It's just much faster. The brand and the model I would recommend is from Samsung. It's their EVO drives, and they make the EVO. They make a couple of different grades, so you should ask your tech which what the prices are and choose the one that you can afford. But Samsung makes excellent.
Kind of looking at something, the SSD drive that's an 860 EVO.
Yeah, that's
$150.
I know, isn't that a great price? So that's about Yeah, it's about a 50%, maybe 75% premium over a spinning drive. But spinning drive, that's only because spinning drives are so inexpensive. $150 for a terabyte, that's nothing.
Well, I thought that was pretty reasonable.
And that's the Samsung EVO is excellent. Highly recommend it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's perfect. Then I'll get that done.
Yeah, enjoy. Yeah, you won't see any difference in terms of operation. It just you'll see everything get faster.
Is that to say that the things that you're downloading, let's say,
that will not speed up your internet?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Your internet speed will stay the same. The only thing that gets faster is stuff that's on the hard drive that you're loading in. So boot times, starting Windows up will be faster. Running programs will be faster. It doesn't even speed up writing data quite as much as it does reading data. Writing is faster, but it's reading that's really a lot faster.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it just popped into my mind that it might be a concern for the current motherboard.
Yeah, no, that's a reasonable question.
When they replaced the hard drive, they did not replace the motherboard.
How old is the device?
Actually, it's kind of funny. It's now 3.5 years old.
Oh, that's
I had
not
an
old.
Extended warranty with something called Square Trade.
Yeah.
And that was good for another extra couple,
nice.
3 years.
So. Excellent.
And that turned out to be certainly worth the money.
Yeah, you're getting your mileage out of it. And that's not an old laptop, so you will see all the benefit of the SSD in there. Absolutely.
Well, depending on how it was when I got it back from repair, I was going to just say, I'll just keep that as a secondary and
right.
buy me an SSD computer, except for they're not that cheap
and you know what?
Anything that's 1 terabyte.
They're not that fast anymore. I mean, not that much faster, the whole thing. I mean, 3 years, we haven't seen huge leaps in speed. It really, I think people got an expectation that speeds in computers would double every year and a half or 2 years. That's Moore's Law.
I did.
Yeah, and it did for a long time, but we've plateaued a little bit. And Intel hasn't really been able to get the speeds up by much. Mostly what they're doing now is putting in multiple processors, and that can get very expensive, having a 4-core or a 6-core CPU in a machine. And doesn't really speed anything up unless the program is multi-core aware, which most programs aren't. Yeah, most of the time, it's the raw clock speed, and you'll notice if you look at your computer from 3.5 years ago, it's probably at 2 gigahertz or 1.6 to 2 gigahertz. The new computer isn't going to be that much faster. It's not going to be probably even noticeably faster. You will notice the difference, though, with the SSD. That is a big improvement. Jeremy in Nashville. Hi, Jeremy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. You call it an antiquarian question.
I love antiquarian questions.
Is there any benefit to a discrete sound card?
Not
now.
Well, I'd probably say not. In most cases, we built a couple of years back the ultimate gaming rig for virtual reality, and we did put a standalone card. Yeah, there's still standalone cards out there, but the motherboard sound that you're getting on almost any modern computer is more than adequate. Do you have any special sound needs?
No, it's just I'm from
I'm from the old days.
Yeah, we had a Sound Blaster, right? We all had sound.
Yeah, Betty Nyhark Hughes and DMA.
Yeah, and that's mostly because motherboards didn't have built-in sound in those days. So if you wanted sound on a computer, you'd have an additional, you know, extender card from Sound Blaster, Creative Labs, and that would give you sound. There, if you're a serious hardcore gamer, some of the third-party, and I think we had an EVGA sound card in this Ultimate Virtual Reality gaming machine, they give you, you know, surround sound capabilities, 7.1, things like that. But you really have to be hardcore gamer to take advantage of that. And even then, I don't notice the difference.
Yeah, not even, there's no benefit even from audio processing.
No. Well, and again, if you're golden ears, you know, golden ears want the best digital to analog converters they can get. So having a good DAC in your computer might make a difference. Although, in my opinion, anything done inside the computer case is going to be prone to noise and degradation anyway because of all the RF bouncing around in that case. So I always just take digital audio out off the motherboard and keep the DAC external. So putting in, you know, something like, let me just, the pricing for the EVGA new audio sound card. I mean, we're talking a ridiculous amount of money. And honestly, the best processing is going to be external to the computer anyway. If you really want to hear good music, take the USB digital out and do the conversion outside. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We got a new sponsor I want to show you. I was kind of excited when Henry came up with this. This is Peak. Peak PTT. Push to talk. And it's still around, but it's better than ever. You know, if you have a company cell phone, but you want to have your employees stay in touch, you got to take a look at Peak PTT. Boost productivity, cut down costs, the leading provider of push-to-talk systems. Yeah, they're still around for business communications. Peak provides advanced IP-based push-to-talk systems. So, yeah, it's not using the phone network. It's going over the internet. This is, I love this little puppy right here. This is a full Android phone system with the push-to-talk capability. Instant talk, location monitoring, yeah, there's GPS, emergency alert notifications. Here's your SOS button on the top, so hikers love these, adventurers. You get local, nationwide, or even worldwide coverage. These devices are rugged. This is the Everest. I mean, this is a ruggedized phone. And there's no contract, and service billing is month-to-month. This is a tough device. You can connect instantly, one-to-one or to hundreds of users at once. So you can have group chat as well with these PTT devices from Peak. Central tracking and communication center, which is great. Here's the walkie-talkie style device. So if you've got a fleet and you want to make sure every driver or every service technician has one of these, you know where they are at all times. Real-time GPS tracking is accurate and gives you complete visibility. And if you get in trouble, the SOS notifications. Oh, and I really like this one. I'll turn it on. This has a great LED flashlight too. So if you're a technician, you're going under sinks or under the house, you're gonna love that. So the Everest PTT system is capable of handling deployments of any size. You get the rugged IP67 or 68 dedicated headsets. 5 nines of network availability. You get lower latency rates than pretty much anyone else in the business. PC-based dispatch console, so you can use this for dispatch as well. But you don't need a fancy, switchboard. You can use your PC for that. Locate devices on demand. They even put them on a map so you know where everybody is. You get the affordable walkie-talkie style handset. That's the PTT84G. Or iOS and Android apps with the Everest, which I really love. This dispatch software as well. It's easily and efficiently going to handle SOS events as well. So you get your PTT, A584G, the 394G, or the 244G. The nice thing about push-to-talk calls, they're shorter. They're more efficient. They're more effective. Typically about 15 seconds versus almost a minute for a traditional call. Get in touch faster, operate more efficiently with Peak. PeakPTT.com. and we're going to get you a good deal. I love these. We're taking these on our trip because that's a great way to stay in touch. Peak. No, you don't get one, Burke. Burke wants one, too. PeakPTT.com. Use the promo code TWIT at checkout. 15% off. PeakPTT.com. And the offer code TWIT is 15% off. These things are so cool. Lisa and I were using this in Southern California. It was kind of fun. Where are you? I'm right here. Oh. I didn't need the PC-based location console, but it would have been nice if I'd had it. PeakPTT.com, promo code TWIT for 15% off. We thank Peak PTT for their support. Car guy Sam Abulsamid is here. He just pulled up in a brand new electric vehicle, the Kia Niro. I just ran outside to take a look at it in our parking lot. It's really, somebody asked when Sam was on a couple of weeks ago, why is it all electric vehicles look weird? And I have to say, for a long time they did, but this is a normal looking car. Absolutely great. It's a little crossover SUV, and we'll get Sam's take on it in just a little bit. Sam Abulsamid, our car guy, joins us in a bit. Meanwhile, I'm going to keep taking calls at 8888 Ask Leo. Leanne's been very patient in Lake Elsinore, California. Thanks for hanging on, Leanne.
Hi, Leo. I called the other week about my laptop.
Yeah, did you get one?
Yes, I got it back, and it is so much faster.
Yay! What did you do? This is the one where you put in a new solid-state drive?
Yes.
Okay. And did you do anything else? You put more memory in it or anything else?
No, not of my
knowledge. See, this is good timing, because the last call in the last hour, a woman had a 3-year-old laptop and was going to put an SSD in it. Do you recommend it?
Yeah, no.
No?
So we did put more memory on it.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. You're talking to your mom now. Okay. I thought you were talking to me. So do you recommend the upgrade, I guess?
Not necessarily if you want to put the extra time in it, I guess.
Yeah. Did you, had somebody do it or did you do it yourself?
Yeah, I had another guy do it.
Yeah. Did you watch?
No, I didn't. I dropped it off in the one afternoon, and I got it the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Sometimes people get queasy during surgery. You don't want to pass out and fall over or anything like that. It's actually pretty easy to do, and it's a fun thing to see because you just remove some screws on the back of the computer. You take off the back plate, and there, in all its glory, is the memory and the drive, and you can just pop in another one. Does it feel faster?
Yes, it does.
Good. How much did you spend for the upgrade?
Yeah.
A lot?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm glad you called back to let us know. So I don't remember, did I tell you to do this or you were thinking about it and I just said go ahead?
We were thinking about it.
Yeah. So you're glad you did it?
Yes, I am.
Good. And you're going to use this for school?
Yeah, I was writing an essay when I was on hold, so.
Oh, good. What's your essay on?
It was about the, it's an American Republic history.
Good. You're doing American history, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What's your, what era? Are you doing the Revolution, or?
We're learning about the Texas, where Texas state takes the statehood and.
Oh, yeah, sure. And the Alamo and all that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I'm glad that it worked out for you, Leanne. I appreciate your giving us a feedback call just to let us know that it happened. And I'm glad you're smart enough to use your time on hold wisely.
Thank you.
You will do well. Get an A.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leanne. Jason in College Station, Texas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
All right. I know you always hear the same thing about everybody says they've watched you since ZDTV, but I just thought I would mention that.
I'll hear that every time. I don't mind. Thank you. I'm glad to know that. I think I could take responsibility for a whole generation of geeks.
Yeah, you know, I had got my first computer in 1988 and
there you go.
Got into Windows back in, I guess, 92, 93.
Nice.
But I was calling to thank you about the Chromebooks. I know you say not to run, you know, any viruses, but I ran about 6 different programs periodically just to keep an eye on, you know, that I don't get malware. And I always find something about once or twice a year. And I'm tired of paying the subscription fees and running all these programs once a week. And I kept hearing you talk about the Chromebooks. So I bought a Chrome box, an Asus Chrome box, about 2 months ago.
Nice.
And I liked it so much, I bought a Dell Chromebook about 2 weeks ago. And other than TurboTax once a year, I plan to just put Windows computers aside.
There you
go. And I really enjoyed the operating system. And I wanted to just call and thank you and point out the secureness and the ease of the operation. So.
And by the way, TurboTax is going to be completely online if they're not already. So you won't even need to get a Windows machine to run TurboTax anymore.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah. I think that's the trend, is everything's going online. It just makes sense.
Well, and there's even, I can't remember the name of it, there's a program that's almost like Photoshop. It's a Chrome extension, and it's free unless you want to pay to get rid of the ad. So that solved that. So I found every problem that I needed to resolve and found them one by one, and then just said, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot.
Oh, I'm so glad. Is it Polar? Is that what you're using?
No, I'm in front of it right
Polar's
now.
Polar's the one I've recommended in the past, Polar with 2 R's. But there may be others as well. I mean, that's the nice thing.
Pixlr Editor.
Oh, yeah, Pixlr I'm familiar with. Yeah, that's been around for a long time. Good. Good. Well, I'm glad you found some. There's a handful of things that people say, oh, you know, I'm a photographer, I need Windows. And those handful of things are slowly being nibbled away by programs like Pixlr, pixlr.com. I'm really glad to hear that. That's great.
Well, I appreciate all your help.
All right.
I really enjoy listening to the show. I'm listening to your, I discovered you again about a year and a half ago, taking a road trip. So I listen to your podcast every week.
Nice.
And I've actually gone back in time. I walk 3 miles a day. And I like to listen to your podcast. I'm listening to
them
from like a year ago, going backwards in time. So.
Nice. Yeah, you're going to hear us get older and older. The computers get older and older and worse, but I'm getting younger. So that's all I care about.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to get the updates. Leanne, I now remember, the chat room reminded me, was the student who called who said it takes her an hour to launch Microsoft Word. And I said, that's wrong, and you need to replace the hard drive because it's about to die. And so she did go out and get an SSD. And while I didn't ask her how long it took her to launch Word, I'm guessing it's seconds, not minutes, and definitely not hours. That's a big, big upgrade. Highly recommend it. And the Chromebook is a great choice for people. I think one of the things that happens in technology is times change. They change rapidly, don't they? But our biases don't, or our feelings about stuff doesn't. And I think for a long time, we were taught you need Windows or you need a general purpose operating system. If you're going to get a computer, you got to get Windows or Mac, and because you're going to need that. And that mindset persists. It's the same mindset that says you're going to have to get an antivirus system. You're going to have to optimize your disk. You know, and times change, and you don't need to optimize disks anymore. You really don't need an antivirus anymore. And for many people, I would say the vast majority of people, you don't need a general purpose operating system anymore. Those days are gone. Yeah, maybe that's what you had at work, and you may still have that at work because there's specialized software you need to run. But most of what we do these days is online, email, surfing the net, even doing your taxes. I did TurboTax entirely online this year. Even doing your taxes. And if it's all online, then there's no reason to spend a lot of money or go through the complexity or the security woes of a full general purpose operating system. They're just too complicated. And a Chrome OS system for many people is everything they need, even amazingly for photo editing and things that traditionally we think you have to have a desktop with a general purpose operating system for. I'm a big fan of the Chromebooks. Less expensive, more reliable, much more secure, and for most people, all you need. Line 4, Daniel in Rancho Santa Margarita. Hello, Rancho.
Rancho. Hello, Daniel.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
It's good. It's like I'm starting to turn into Larry King. Rancho Santa Margarita, you're on.
Oh, no, no. Well, I actually have a question. You know, speaking of getting older, well, you're not that old.
I'm getting old. I admit it. I'm in my 60s now. Don't tell anybody, though. Nobody would trust a tech guy under 40 or over 40.
Well, I want to look to my elders because I'm a tech guy who's graduating from Cal State Fullerton soon. And
hey,
I
congratulations.
Just
what's your
really
major?
Computer science, please.
Yeah, good man.
Yeah, I love it. And so I've been listening to your show and absolutely think it's amazing. So I had a question I was wondering if you could help me answer. As someone who's sort of interned in IT administration, I've been looking at the myriad of certificates
professional
organizations look for.
Yeah.
Everything from Red Hat Enterprise to the Cisco CCNAs to CompTIA's Network Plus, Security Plus. Mm-hmm. For someone who wants to get into IT and network administration, what would you say is a good place to start at for these certifications?
Boy, you got me. And I really don't know. Issue is what job you want and what they're going to expect. I can tell you the certs that are kind of generally of interest. For instance, if you think you're going to be doing desktop help, you know, where you're going to take calls or you're going to go from office to office and help people, you know, get their printer working, that kind of thing, the A-plus certificate's very useful. But I think that's kind of a low-level cert, and you may want a better job. For instance, if I were you, I would be looking at security and networking. So you mentioned the Cisco certifications. Those are good. The CCNA and like that are good certificates for people who want to be in networking. If you want to be in security, ISC, the folks who do A-plus have have a security cert as well, the Security Plus cert. So it really comes down to what are the best certs? Well, what is the job you want?
That's fair.
Yeah.
And then I've also wondering if you heard anything. I know AWS is now offering their own certs.
And a great cert to have, because almost any job you have, you're going to be managing Amazon Web Services servers.
All right, perfect.
Basically, learn everything you can. But if you know ahead of time the kinds of jobs you're going to be looking for, and often if you look at listings, you know, go on Glassdoor or places where tech jobs are offered, and you look at the listings, they will say, you know, looking for somebody with, unfortunately, what they often say is 5 years experience. That's what the cert is there for, is to say, well, I don't have any experience. I'm just getting out of school. Your degree is going to get you is going to get you farther than a cert, because that shows you had the stick-to-itiveness and the brains to get through a four-year program in computer science. You know, as an employer, that is more important to me. Most smart employers aren't just looking for specific skills. More important than the specific skills is the ability and willingness to learn and the brains to learn new stuff. So you're going to go in with an A-plus, for instance, and be good on the help desk. But really, as an employer, what I'm looking for is somebody with initiative, who's got the stick-to-itiveness, and all of that. Your four-year degree kind of says that. That's good. That's really good. And you'll see a lot of the people you're competing with don't have that degree.
Okay, perfect.
Most people nowadays coming out of CS and engineering want to be app developers and do a startup, right?
Yeah, I've actually been asked by a few fellow students to join their
join our startup. I think you're right. Get a real job. Get a real job. Now, I would imagine ultimately the goal is to get a job in a company where the stock is valuable and you get stock compensation. You know, get a Google or a Facebook job or Apple. And a lot of times I think people like you coming out of school have a favorite. You know, you might say, well, I'd really like to work over at Snapchat, you know, down there in Santa Monica. It's a nice location. It's a hot and, you know, a hot business. And they're going to have a valuable stock. Actually, Snapchat don't do that. But not anymore. But you get what I'm saying. People are looking for. So it's okay to follow your heart. But I think you've got, just with that Fullerton degree, you're going to have something of real value. And if you want to add an A-plus to that or a CCNA to that, just to say, I think, honestly, networking and security skills are the best skills you could have these days. And AWS, heck yeah. Absolutely. Everybody. Amazon Web Services
is the king of the hill when it comes to this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's also how much time do you have? How much money do you have? Because each of these certs takes time and money.
Yeah, of course. And that's why I wanted to sort of narrow down the search. I went to AWS's summit last year in Anaheim. And
fun.
It was, oh, my God, just everything they have.
And they're market leaders, absolutely, which could be good. It could be bad. I mean, it wouldn't be bad to have Azure certification, the Microsoft cloud. It wouldn't be bad to have Google certification, the Google cloud. It's just all what I would say. Do what you really are interested in. You're going to do better at it. If you really love networking, if you really love security, maybe what really rocks your boat is helping people get their computers working. That's what I do. And if that's what really turns you on, then an A-plus certificate would be a good choice.
All right.
There's so many options out there. You're very welcome. It's great to talk to you. I appreciate your listening, and I'm glad that even somebody with your skills and knowledge continues to listen. Did you study programming?
I did. So I did a 4-year course. Unfortunately, Cal State Fullerton doesn't have any emphasis, but I did everything from computational bioinformatics to parallel and distributed computing to machine learning. So I've got a nice broad view.
The world is your oyster. Pick an area you like and, you could do whatever you want right now. You're hot.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations. Good luck. Would you graduate in May?
I do. May 19th.
You're going to walk in May. That's awesome. I bet your folks are very proud, Daniel. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm extremely excited.
Well done.
And thank you for representing the CS community very well.
You couldn't have a better degree right now. You're a hot commodity. And Fullerton's a great school to get it. You're doing great. Well done. He's breaking the speed of sound. How do he do it? Sam Abul-Samid, the car guy, senior researcher from Navigant Research. And he's here in studio because he drove all the way in an electric vehicle.
I did.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leo.
All the way from the airport, anyway.
Well, yeah.
So you're driving a Kia Niro.
Kia Niro electric. So last week we were talking about electrified vehicles, and I mentioned the Niro. And, the term electrified kind of encompasses all of everything from basic mild hybrids all the way through full battery electrics like this one or the Tesla Model S that's also sitting
there. Does it have to have an electric motor on the axle to make it electrified?
An electric motor that's feeding into the drive system somewhere.
Okay, somehow.
Yeah, so
the drivetrain is electric.
Yeah, so in some cases, like you can get some mild hybrids where it uses a belted starter generator. So instead of the standard alternator, it's got a heavier duty one that looks pretty much like an alternator. But it drives through the belt and adds some boost to the engine.
Oh, interesting.
So the engine doesn't have to work as hard.
Right.
And those are 48-volt mild hybrids. Fiat Chrysler was the first company to introduce those in North America last year on the new Jeep Wrangler and also on the Ram 1500.
And you do that for fuel economy? What are you?
Yeah, you do it for a fuel economy boost. With a 48-volt mild hybrid, that'll give you about a 10 to 15% boost in fuel economy. For relatively low cost, and it gives you that extra kick without the engine having to work so hard, so you get a little more torque. But then it also allows you to do enhanced auto stop start. So where most auto stop start systems, wait till you come to a complete stop and it shuts off the engine and then it'll restart. This can actually, or in general, these things can start shutting down the engine at about 7 or 8 miles an hour. Till you coast to a stop, and then wait till you get it going a couple miles an hour before it restarts, so you get a smoother stop and start. It's more seamless. So all of these things contribute to better fuel economy.
Eventually, I imagine, will be an all electric economy for vehicles.
In the long term, yeah. But here in the U.S., we've got 280 million registered vehicles on the road. And
that's a lot of vehicles,
and the average age is about 12 years now. So you're talking 20, 30 years at least. If you started selling 100% electric vehicles today, it would still take you 20, 25 years before you would replace the entire fleet, because you're not going to scrap the entire fleet of vehicles at one time.
Well, I love driving electric. I mean, one of the concerns people had about electric is, that kind of range anxiety that there's gas stations everywhere, but where am I going to get juice to charge my vehicle? And then there's also the concern if you don't own your own home, where are you going to get a charger in their apartment? And then the concern about you know, the cost of running it? Because it's, I think sometimes people assume it's going to be cheaper, and depending on the cost of electricity, it may even be more expensive.
Yeah, I mean, for most people, it's generally going to be cheaper, you know, depending
on... Here in California, yeah, electricity is so expensive.
Yeah, but even here, you know, even at, you know, 35, you know, 40 cents a kilowatt hour at the, like, the highest possible rates, it's generally still... At worst, it's going to be comparable to running a gas car. Yeah. It's generally still going to be cheaper.
And the good news is, environmentally, it's better. There's no emissions. I feel
no direct
good.
Emissions. No, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, creating the electricity could create emissions. Although we have solar panels, so we're kind of have this kind of nice sun powered vehicle we're driving around. But also, these vehicles are a lot simpler.
Yeah.
Gas engines are a very complicated beast. Electric motors,
they're mechanically simpler. Right. There are other aspects of it.
That computer
are
wise.
Yeah. You know, you've got the computers, you've got power electronics, you know, that have to convert between the DC, the direct current you get from a battery, into the AC for the motor. And, you know, those power electronics are actually pretty expensive and, you know, pretty complex electrical systems. Yeah. So that's the inverter that transfers back and forth.
So what do you think of this Niro? You like it?
Yeah, I like it a lot.
This is a Hyundai, right?
It's part of Hyundai Motor Group. So Hyundai Motor Group owns Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis brands. So this is actually a Kia. So, you know, Kia and Hyundai are the two mainstream brands that are part of the Hyundai Motor Group. And it's on a platform that it shares with the Hyundai Ioniq, which was designed from the ground up to be an electrified powertrain or electrified platform. So you can get it as a hybrid. So if you really don't have anywhere to plug in, and also you want the most affordable version, that would be the hybrid. And those, you know, both the Ioniq and the Niro hybrid get about 50 miles per gallon. And then you can also get a plug-in hybrid version that gets about 27 miles of electric range on a charge. So you can use that, you know, for most people's driving needs. You'll be able to do almost all your driving on electricity alone. And then when you need to take a road trip, you don't have to worry about planning where you're going to stop to charge and things like that. You just drive it like a hybrid once the battery is depleted. And then there's the full electric version, which is what we've got here, which has a range of 239 miles.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is. And it's quite a roomy little car. You know, it's
looks like a normal crossover.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of luggage capacity in the back. And this is a very popular style of cars. People don't buy sedans so much in the U.S.
Yeah. You know, there's been a dramatic shift away from sedans and coupes towards crossover utility vehicles over the last several years. And so,
in which are normally gas guzzling, so it's good to see them with electricity.
And increasingly we're seeing them, you know, offered as hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and in this case, full electrics. Yeah.
Is it fun to drive? Because that's one thing I love about my Tesla. Is now I don't have insane. Oh, I do have insane mode. I just turned it off because it made me nuts. I don't have ludicrous mode. Does it have that kind of torque?
It's got lots. I mean, it's nowhere near that.
It's not insane.
But, you know, it's got a lot, you know, because all electric motors have, you know, really strong low end torque.
You tap the pedal, they go boom.
Yeah. So it feels really quick right off the line. So for the kind of driving that most people do all the time, you know, it's got great drivability. There's no lag. You know, when you step on the accelerator pedal, it just goes. 0 to 60 is about 7.5 seconds, which is fast enough for anybody.
That's fast enough. How about regenerative braking? It's the other thing I like about a lot of these vehicles is they slow down when you take your foot off the accelerator because they're starting to charge the battery up with that stored up energy.
Right. So there's paddles on the steering wheel. Like some cars have shift paddles on the steering wheel. In this case, the paddles allow you to control the amount of regen you get. So the right paddle gives you less regen. The left paddle gives you more regen.
Oh, that's
cool.
You can
adjust it from 1 to 3. And, you know, at the maximum regen, you basically get, you know, the kind of braking you would normally do in normal driving.
When you come up to a stop sign.
Yeah. So
you can take your foot off the accelerator and it starts to slow. Does it come to a stop?
If you pull and hold the left paddle, it will bring it all the way to a stop. If you just take your foot off and don't do it, it'll slow down to about 5 or 7 miles an hour.
Then you tap the brake.
Yeah. Or like I said, you can just grab the paddle and it'll bring you all the way to a complete stop.
What's the negative? One problem with electric vehicles is there's a lot of battery in there, and batteries are not cheap.
Right. So clearly the electric version is the most expensive variant. It's going to be roughly around $37,000.
What percentage of that is the battery?
Probably about a third of that cost is the battery.
So it's expensive still.
Yeah, yeah, it's still pretty expensive.
They're lithium ion batteries like the ones in your laptop.
Yep. And it's a liquid cooled battery.
Why is that? I hear that term used.
So you have air cooled batteries and liquid cooled batteries. The Nissan Leaf has an air cooled battery. Liquid cooled allows you to do better, more precise control of the battery temperature.
The worst thing you can do to a lithium ion battery is let it heat up.
Yeah, you don't want to overheat it because then you start to degrade the battery.
So and it heats when you're charging it.
Yep.
Or when you're in the hot sun and driving fast. So cooling it is really important to keep the battery life up. What kind of battery life? I think this is another concern people have. What kind of battery life are we going to get? Is it going to last 10 years?
It should easily last 10 years, yeah. And in fact, here in California, it's warrantied by law. Manufacturers have to warranty it for 10 years or 100,000 or 150,000 miles.
So that's nothing to worry about either.
No, I wouldn't worry about battery life on any of the modern EVs.
Well, Sam, a little later, I want to take a ride.
Absolutely.
Sam Abul-Samid, he's our car guy, senior researcher at Navigant Research. In town, he gets to drive all the new cars. Let me know when you get that Porsche Taycan. That's the one I want to look at. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88. Isn't Sam great? It's a fascinating world. I mean, the world of cars, which hadn't changed really much in decades, is all of a sudden completely changing. And I think for the better. I do. I think for the better. 8888 Ask Leo. Last segment of the weekend. Let's go to line one, Richard, in West Los Angeles. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk again.
Thanks for hanging on.
Leo, I use my phone and my tablet mainly at home, and I plug it into the electrical outlet. Am I doing any damage to the battery or to the phone or to the tablet?
There is great debate on this, and I will tell you my strong opinion based on science. And by the way, if people often say, well, Leo, where do you get your information from? There's a website that is really probably the definitive website on battery practices. It's called Battery University, which is a good name, batteryuniversity.com. The problem is if you read the stuff on Battery University, what they'll give you is a lot of information, but they won't give you very simple recommendations. I will give you, based on my understanding of everything I've read at Battery University, my recommendations for lithium-ion batteries. The only, as we were talking earlier with Sam, the thing that's bad for lithium-ion batteries is overheating. So you want to keep them at room temperature. You don't want them too cold, and you don't want them too hot. The other thing that's bad for lithium-ion batteries is fully discharging them. Don't fully discharge them. However, it is not bad to keep them plugged in. In fact, it is my advice to do exactly that. If you use a laptop, if you want to preserve the battery the best you can, take the battery out and don't mess with it. But since you can't really take it out of any modern tablet or phone, leave it plugged in is the next best thing. There's circuitry in that battery to prevent overcharging. That's another bad thing with lithium ion, because unfortunately it can overheat at that point and then explode. But they all have, anything well-made is going to have plenty of circuitry to keep that from happening. And typically what a phone or a laptop does is little micro cycles. They'll let it deplete just a tiny bit and then charge it back up, then let it deplete and charge it back up. That doesn't really hurt the battery. Your battery has a certain number of charge-discharge cycles, typically around 500, but that's 100% discharged and 100% charged. So it's always discharging, and by keeping it plugged in, you're just keeping it from discharging too much, and you're keeping it fully charged. If you're going to store it, the advice is to ideally store it at about 50%, no more, no less. And that's it. Don't let it get too hot. Don't put it in the dashboard in the sun. I presume you're inside, so you don't have to worry about that. It's fine to keep it plugged in. In fact, it'd be my preference to keep it plugged in. There's certainly no disadvantage to doing that on a properly designed circuit. Now, you're going to hear, if you go and read up on this, do a Google search, you're going to hear 20 different opinions from all sorts of places. So the only thing I would recommend is batteryuniversity.com. And that will give you a lot more information. It's really about chemistry. All batteries do essentially is store electricity through a chemical reaction and then discharge it through the reverse of that chemical reaction. And that's basically it. Preserving the integrity of the battery means making sure that that chemical reaction isn't impeded in any way. It doesn't degrade in any way. And in terms of lithium ion, mostly that's from heat. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I wish I could be, you know, I know there people are going to put opinions on the website at techguylabs.com, and please do. There are different. You'll hear a lot of people say, no, never leave it plugged in. I leave everything plugged in. If I'm at my desk, I plug it in and leave it plugged in. That has two advantages. One, when you get ready to leave, it's fully charged, right? And two, it doesn't hurt the battery. Doesn't hurt the battery to do that. On we go. And I think a lot of the lore about batteries refers to older technologies, things like nickel-cadmium batteries, which had memory effects and all sorts of other problems. Lithium-ion batteries don't share those characteristics. Richard in West L.A.? I'm sorry, that was Richard. Dale in Highland, California. Hi, Dale.
Yes, Leah, how you doing?
I'm well.
I've been having trouble with these telemarketers and spam on my phone.
Oh, you and everybody else, my friend.
And I cannot find an app that will actually stop them or kill them or do a reverse Trojan horse to get them down.
Don't do a reverse Trojan horse. That just brings you down to their level and in some states would be illegal. But there is a very good app called No Mo Robo that does the best anybody can do. It's not perfect because of these robocallers, the way they work, they change phone numbers every time. And so no list of numbers to block will ever be 100% effective. Yes, Nomo Robo also has another disadvantage. You have to pay for it if you want to get the premium service. And you have to redirect your phone number through them. However, I tried the free trial, and I did notice a decrease. Robocalls are a real problem. In fact, if you want a great take on it, I recommend Last Night Tonight, the HBO show with John Oliver. He did an entire segment on this last Sunday. And at the end of the segment, he set up a robocaller to robocall the FCC commissioners every 90 minutes to tell them to fix this. Because unfortunately, instead of making it illegal to do robocalls, they've merely advised companies not to do it. They haven't prohibited robocalls. Despite the fact that the chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, says this is a real problem, it is more than half of all the phone calls on cells now are robocalls or spam calls of some kind. More than half. It means that the cell service is basically useless because you can't answer the phone. I make a rule. I only answer the phone if I know who it is, but that kind of limits the use of it. What if it's somebody I don't, you know, my doctor or my dentist, I don't have their number in there. And often these robocalls spoof the area code to be your area code. They even go a step farther, spoofing the exchange, you know, the second set of three numbers to match yours. So I have a 707 phone that has 971 as a prefix. I'll get calls all the time from 707-971 something. And the problem with that is you don't know. Is that the school? Is that my neighbor? Is it somebody whose number is not in my address book but I should be talking to? And, of course, that's why they do it. It works. And then they say, hey, congratulations, you've won a free cruise. Or here's a chance to go visit a timeshare in Cabo San Lucas. Or did you know that your Medicare Part B is running out? Or, you know, any number of silly time-wasting things. It's a horrific problem. I think John Oliver's campaign to robocall the FCC, I'm sure he had the lawyers go over it. it's pretty funny. I don't know if it'll achieve anything. There have been some moves afoot to, you know, fix this problem, but so far nothing. So of the apps that are out there, Nomo Robo is one. There are many, but that seems to work well. It's a real problem. If you have to answer your phone, you know, because it's a business line or whatever, and you don't know who's going to be calling, it means that more than half of your calls will be a complete and utter waste of your time. And that's just not okay. All the cell phone carriers are starting to block. I am, you know, on Verizon and T-Mobile, I'm seeing spam likely a lot. But they don't block the call. It just says spam likely. And it's not complete any more than Nomo Robo is because the people who do these robocalls have all sorts of ways to spoof phone numbers. That's really, in the long run, that's the FCC's proposal to eliminate this, is a set of protocols called stir and shaken, that will authenticate phone calls, and that might make a difference. Might. I'm not holding out high hope. Hey, thanks so much to Big Pee Wee for doing the music today, to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones, our phone angel, and most of all, thanks to you for joining me. It's been a great week. Happy St. Patrick's Day, and I'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.